Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday the 5th of May 2021 and this is Reconstruction with me, David Taylor from the Construction Index magazine and Phil Bishop, editor of our daily online news service. Morning Phil, how are you doing?
Morning David, good as ever, how are you?
Well, apart from the hay fever, I'm fine. I mean, it's really cruel. It's still bloody freezing here. It's like winter, but I've got hay fever.
In context of the past 14 months, I know hay fever can be very bad for some people. But hay fever, schmay fever. I mean, get over it.
Well, all right then, fine, I'll do my best. Anyway, have you had your copy of your magazine, or my magazine rather, Phil?
Yes, I have had my copy of your magazine. It's sitting in front of me.
What do you think of the front cover?
Fabulous photo of a chopped down forest somewhere in Scotland, is it?
It is in Scotland, yes. Yeah, it's a bit different. It's not a construction picture per se. It's, as you say, it's a picture of some logs.
Well, it's getting ready for construction. It's the supply chain.
So that neatly segues on to our first topic of the podcast, which is our main feature, which is all about timber construction.
We're going to talk about wood, aren't we, and try and resist the temptation to make Viz-style schoolboy jokes.
Oh, yes.
And be grown up. And let's refer to it as timber. Might be safer.
Yes, okay then. So, we've got wood in the latest issue of the magazine.
We've got timber in the latest issue.
Well, timber, as we know, is, it's a very important building product. Always has been, ever since people started building things. And anybody in the construction industry will know that we use a lot of timber. But what I hadn't realised until our colleague Lisa Russell researched this feature here is that actually we're not self-sufficient in timber in this country at all. You probably know, Phil, that that in Scotland they use an awful lot of timber in construction, particularly in housing. Far larger proportion of Scottish houses are timber frame houses than anywhere in England and Wales, and that's largely because of the I always assumed it was largely because of the fact that they've got lots of softwood forests up in Scotland, and they've got a huge and almost unlimited resource. But it turns out that nearly all the timber which is used in construction in the UK is imported. Apart from the OSB, I mentioned this the other week actually, OSB, oriented strand board, MDF, medium density fibre board, chip board, that kind of thing, which we can make in this country, in the UK, because that's made out of low quality wood, but the actual structural timbers we can't produce in any reasonable volume in this country, so they're imported from mainly Scandinavia. Well, anyway,
hang on, why can't we grow our own trees?
Well, we did grow them, but they're I don't know, they're just sort of...
Are they the wrong type?
No, they're not the wrong type. Sitka spruce, Douglas fir, they all grow in Scotland, but they don't. I think they grow more quickly because it's a warmer climate, and so they're not as dense. The quality isn't as good. I think that's the reason, anyway. But we cannot produce the correct grade of structural timber in any reasonable quantity. The grade, incidentally, is C24. High-end imported products use grade C24 timber, says Lisa here. And Scotland can produce C24 timber, but only in the process generating a lot of waste, if that makes sense. So it's not been worthwhile to produce C24 timber in Scotland. They can produce something called C16 timber, and something which the Scottish timber industry is developing called C16 Plus, and so there's this new project which is being sponsored by or being run by Construction Scotland Innovation Centre, CSIC. Might as well mention some of the other people working on it. There's Edinburgh Napier University Centre for Offsite Construction and Innovative Structures, Scottish Forestry, Confederation of Forest Industries, and Sustainable Homes Consultant SNRG, which apparently is an offshoot of Centrica, the energy company, which is quite interesting. Well, they're all working together to try and demonstrate that homegrown Scottish timber can be used for structural purposes. And they've set up a factory to make these engineered timber products. And we can mention a few of them later on. But it requires this large vacuum press, which apparently didn't exist in the UK previously. We haven't had the technology or the equipment to make things like glulam, glue laminated timber and various other engineered products. Well, now they are making it and they're developing their own variation. Something called glue laminated timber portal is the key product that they've developed, which is I won't go into details, but it's a new type of using a new method of using
glulam.
Yeah, well, glulam and CLT. CLT is one of these products called that consists of layered timber boards stacked crosswise, cross-laminated timber. That's the stuff. In fact, I'm going to mention these different types of engineered timber products because it's quite easy to get confused, as you can probably tell.
Yes, I saw that. Page 37, if anyone's got their copy of the magazine in front of them. It's a very handy little table you've printed.
Yeah, that's right.
All new to me, this stuff.
Well, there's CLT, NLT, DLT, GLT, and BLT. No, BLT is a sandwich. Sorry.
Well, I'm glad we've got DLT in there. I'd be missing him.
Oh God, yeah, I'd forgotten DLT. My goodness, that dates us, Phil. Dave Lee Travis, for anybody who isn't hip with 1970s Radio 1 DJs, Dave Lee Travis, not dowel laminated timber, which is what we're talking about here. Yeah, anyway, so these things, CLT, cross-laminated timber, which is strips of timber, glued together and orientated at 90 degrees to each other, a bit like plywood in many ways. Nail laminated timber, which is, again, strips of wood nailed together. Dowel laminated timber, which, as you probably know by now, is the same as NLT, but uses dowels instead of nails. And then GLT, glue laminated timber, or glulam, which is a bit more familiar, I think, to many people in the industry. Anyway, so they're working on this. They're building a little house, actually, out of this. It's a sort of demonstration project.
I actually like the sound of dowel laminated timber the best, not just because it's DLT, but it somehow seems more crafty. You're not using nails or glue, but to use dowels makes it the real thing, like they might have done a very long time ago.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, if you think about traditional timber, when I say traditional timber frame, I'm talking about sort of like green oak timber frame, which is all, very much traditional carpentry. You've got your joints, which are pegged together with dowels, oak dowels. Yeah, I suppose it's similar to that. Although I can't quite bring myself to believe that DLT and NLT don't include any glue, because I'd have thought something which is just pegged together, especially if it's lots of strips of wood pegged together with dowels, that's going to come apart sooner or later, I would have thought.
It worked for Noah.
Well, yes, I suppose he probably didn't.
40 days and nights anyway.
That's true. It only had to last 40 days and nights. So I suppose that's, I don't know. But anyway,
the house. You're saying they're building a house?
Yeah, they're building this house as a sort of demonstration project. And this is where their glue-laminated timber portal is being showcased. It's a way of supporting a floor from above rather than below. So it creates a lot of space. It's all very nice. They're going to they're assembling this stuff, this house, rather, at the CSIC's facility in, I can't remember exactly where it is. Hamilton, I think. Near Glasgow. Anyway, it's going to be reassembled, taken apart and reassembled at the COP26 United Nations Conference on Climate Change in November.
They're going to take it apart, take it down to Cornwall and rebuild it for the...
Cornwall? No, it's in Glasgow, COP26.
Well, what's happening in Glasgow, in Cornwall then?
I've no idea.
Where all the... where they've been building the hotels. The big green summit. Something's happening in Cornwall.
Really? We'll have to look into that.
A hotel has got into trouble for building extensions without planning permission so that all the world leaders can get there.
Really? Well, this one's going to be in Glasgow, as far as I know. Either that or it's a misprint. Forgive me, folks, if it is, but I think this is in Glasgow.
G7.
Oh, it's a G7, really?
G7 in Cornwall.
Oh, right, okay. Well, anyway, they're not going to take their wooden house down to Cornwall. They're just going to take it up the road to Glasgow. So, yeah, I think that's quite interesting. The fact that, you know, we don't actually produce good enough quality timber in this country came as a bit of a surprise. But they're doing something about it, so that's good. It's a good feature, actually. I recommend it. So check that out, folks. But timber is a very versatile product.
I think it's always been my favourite building material. And it's the one I still feel, not that I'm a hack journalist rather than a construction professional of any kind whatsoever. But when I do get around to doing odd bits of building work, timber, wood, is the material that I feel the most comfortable with. It's very forgiving. It's the easiest thing to start again. Much easier to start again with timber than with cement or concrete or anything.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
You can sand it. It's a lot, you know, plastering and painting, all those other things. Your mistakes show up. You can cover up your mistakes with timber.
Yeah, you can.
I have confidence with the product because as a small child, I won the carpentry cup at junior school. But we had a very aged carpentry teacher who would push his bike with lots and large planks of wood and heavy tool bags on his bike up the hill to the school. And it was like elves in Santa's workshop or something, because we would cut a few bits of wood, come back the next week, and lo and behold, suddenly a garden bench that we'd made had materialised.
And wow.
Parents were always terribly impressed at what we small children created. Honest truth is, we hardly did anything. And I think the cup was rotated amongst people every term for whoever was the most enthusiastic or chatty or didn't cut themselves as much as the other people.
So did you win it with your garden bench? Is that how you
I can't
you
remember if it was a garden bench or a rabbit hutch or a dog kennel, but they tend to be fairly substantial things that we made. But to be honest,
for you.
You know, I would participate in elements of the production process, but I felt a real fraud taking any credit for the finished object. But anyway, I have a early junior training in woodwork, and I enjoyed it and still appreciate the wonders of timber.
Yeah, something to be proud of. One thing about timber which I which was brought to my attention this week, and I don't know if you got this press release, is that it's got absolutely nothing to do with construction, so I don't know why we were sent it, is that you can wear timber as well as clothing. Did you know that?
I did, and I'll tell you why. I got a press release from some fashion company I've never heard of, and I thought, what? Why? Go on, tell us about it.
Right, well, it's headlined, Adolfo Dominguez. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Is he famous? Is Adolfo Dominguez famous?
Apparently he's a famous Spanish designer, fashion designer, who I've never heard of. But
I was about to say, I've heard of Gordon McQueen, but he was a footballer. I mean, Alexander McQueen, I've heard of him. Gordon.
Adolfo Dominguez. Anyway, he's a fashion designer, Spanish fashion designer, who has a penchant for launching campaigns. A bit like Catherine Hamnett, I suppose, only less visible, because I've never heard of him before. But anyway, his latest campaign is Dress Like a Tree, and I thought that when I saw the headline. In fact, the headline stopped me from deleting it automatically. I just thought it was... I had a vision of a Christmas tree. I thought that here's a fashion designer saying you should just dangle baubles from your earlobes and that kind of thing, wear tinsel around your head, but people do that anyway. No, the thing is that apparently this chap says that the fashion industry, and he's quite right, because there's been quite a lot said in the media about this, the fashion industry is terribly bad for the environment. We're used to discussing the cement industry on this podcast, and we all know about cement's carbon footprint and that it's massive. But the fashion industry, which you wouldn't expect to be particularly environmentally damaging, actually is, and particularly cotton, it turns out. I think Stacey Dooley did some big expose on the television about the cotton industry last year or the year before, or something like that. So it's a big thing. And also there's this problem with the fashion industry producing disposable products.
Cotton itself, I don't think, is a bad thing. It's the water and the insecticides and the chemicals, isn't it, rather than the cotton
Yes,
itself,
I think so. I yeah, I think so. So anyway, I'm taking a long time to get around to the point here. This chap is saying, Adolfo Dominguez is embracing the use of Tencel as a fibre of the future. And Tencel is a trademark. It's a brand of...
It's an Austrian company, isn't it? An Austrian manufacturer.
Yeah, Austrian or German. I can't remember what the generic fibre is that they're using here. But it's actually, it's derived from trees. This is wonderful. This is why he's saying dress like a tree, because what he makes his clothes out of nowadays is made from trees. Well, that's a rather disingenuous way of saying that he's making his clothes out of rayon. Now, rayon is, everybody knows, one of the first synthetic fibres. It is made out of cellulose. And what you do is you get chemicals and you dissolve the cellulose out of wood fibre or other plant fibre. And then you do something with some clever chemistry and spin it into a fibre itself. And that's it. Rayon, viscose, and this stuff. Lyocell.
This is all news to me, because I always thought that anything that wasn't wool or cotton-based was some sort of derivative of polyester and just chemicals and ICI. Now you're telling me that, no, if my clothes aren't made of wool or cotton, they're made of trees.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the thing. I mean, because you think of a synthetic fibre like nylon or...
Nylon's not made of trees, then. Polyester, they're
not made
of trees.
No, it's made from oil, basically. It's
rayon that's the... What's it? The green material.
Rayon is made from cellulose. So, yeah, it is green. So the people have cottoned onto this. Forgive the inadvertent pun there. But you'll probably have noticed that people are now... They're now pushing bamboo clothing. You must have seen this bamboo.
Yes,
bamboo
well,
socks.
It's on several members of my family have it on their Christmas list. I'd like some bamboo socks, please. So I'm familiar with them. And I was quite surprised to find that they weren't actually stiff and bamboo-y and wooden like a pair of clogs.
I was going to say, really, really uncomfortable. Yeah, but you can get bamboo underpants as well, which if you imagine, that sounds like some sort of bizarre torture, doesn't it? But... I mean, the reason that bamboo is... You can actually extract the bamboo fibre from the stem, a bit like you can extract linen from flax. But I think there's too much lignum, is it, or something in bamboo to make it really viable. Bamboo fibre is stiff and inflexible. So basically, if you're going to make a fibre out of bamboo, you make rayon. And the good thing about it, of course, is that bamboo grows very quickly, doesn't need a lot of fertilizer, doesn't need a lot of water. So it is a good environmental solution for clothing, to make the clothing out of rayon. But people don't like to say rayon because it sounds like a man-made fiber.
I thought it was a man. Well, I suppose all fibers are man-made, aren't they? You know, you've got to pick the cotton or shear the sheep or whatever. Man is involved or... person is involved in there. But yes, it's interesting how what used to be, you know, I mean, polyester was great when it came out because it, you know, dried quickly, used to wash and maintain and didn't get holes in it or whatever. Although, don't go near any naked flames. Is that polyester? What's the one that catches fire too easily?
I should think polyester, but rayon probably too.
No, it's interesting that suddenly that people like me, ignorant people like me, assume that rayon, man-made fibre, ooh, bad thing, I want cotton or wool, please. Suddenly being told, no, if you wear rayon, you are a bona fide tree hugger and a good person.
But it's a good example of the marketing industry at work here, because if people were to start marketing rayon or viscose, well, you know, it's counterintuitive. When you look at a label and you say it's 100% viscose, you think, ugh. It's made out of man-made fibre. But if you see it's 100% cotton, you think, that's good stuff. And so if you see a label saying 100% bamboo, that's even better because you know it's sustainable.
Presumably it's not. Presumably it's only ever going to be like 10% tree and 90% chemical, though, isn't it? I mean, is it how much tree is there?
I don't know. Well, that's a good question. I don't know, because I don't know if any of the chemicals used in its processing end up in the final product, or whether it's just pure cellulose fibre. But it is basically cellulose. It must be the majority of the material is cellulose fiber, but I mean they have to do some awful things to it to turn it into a fiber that you can make clothes out of. And the thing about this one, Mr. Dominguez fiber, the tensile stuff, is it's made out of, I did find the name of it just now, I can't remember what it, lyocell. I looked this up on the internet.
That's a brand name as well, I assume, is it?
I think it's now generic, a bit like nylon. Lyocell, but it's the most recently developed type of rayon, and it's made without using a chemical called carbon sulfide, which apparently is very toxic, and so it's nicer than viscose, but it's more expensive as a result. So it's a premium brand of rayon, basically, Tencel Lyocell. It's all very nice, and it's good. You can make socks out of it. And all sorts of other things.
Like you, I have the press release in front of me and I have to read from it.
Go on.
Tencel Lyocell, a fibre derived from the renewable raw material wood, which both respects the planet and goes gentle on the skin. I think it's the first time I've ever thought of wood gentle on the skin.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've firmly established that timber, wood, is a fabulously versatile material.
Yeah.
And we are very enthusiastic about it. But timber is in short supply at the moment. Mm. I spent the last weekend, bank holiday weekend, visiting my mother in the Yorkshire Dales for the first time I've seen her in many months due to this whole COVID lockdown business, and drove past somewhere up the A1, a large builder's merchant, I can't remember which one it was, I think one of the large regional ones, with racks and racks and racks outside the big warehouse, almost empty except for about four long pieces of timber, and clearly this is where racks and racks of timber were meant to be, and that's it, virtually empty. And this was the first time I'd witnessed myself that which I have been, and all the construction trade press have been reporting over the past few weeks and months, that timber is in very short supply. It's hard to get. And I think we mentioned not long ago that the Construction Leadership Council put out a warning. This was a month ago. They have something called a Product Availability Working Group, involving the Builders Merchant Federation and the Construction Products Federation. And they're saying that things are going to get worse before they get better with all sorts of materials, but particularly timber. Imports of timber will be an issue for the foreseeable future. Not enough timber is being produced to meet world demand, they said. Added to this, other countries are prepared to pay more to secure their supply, pushing the UK lower down the pecking order.
Our Scottish friends better hurry up then.
Exactly what I'm saying, yes, as soon as the Scottish can get... And maybe we should get some bamboo growing here, because nothing grows quite as quickly as bamboo.
So what else has caught your eye this week then, Phil?
Well, moving on from one of my favourite topics to one of my least favourite topics. I hate thinking about the concept of it, and I hate thinking about whether I've got enough of it. Pensions and pension provision.
Yes.
The Unite Union put something out last week. They submitted a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Work and Pensions, basically to find out how many people in the construction sector have got some sort of pension provision that they're paying into. And it's a depressingly low number.
It is. Shocking, actually.
I had a quick look at what the national numbers are, Office of National Statistics and various organisations like that. The newest numbers I could find were 2018, which I imagine are working men, 48% of working women and 52% of working men. So roughly, let's say, half of working people had a private pension a couple of years ago. In terms of a workplace pension, in 2018, 76% of UK employees were a member of a workplace pension scheme, up from 73% in 2017, and up from, in 2012, when automatic enrolment was introduced, it was 47%, less than half. So automatic enrolment's gone from less than half to more than three quarters of UK employees are in a workplace pension scheme.
That's automatic enrolment in your
employer's scheme.
Yeah.
Now, the problem, as we know full rightly, is that an awful lot of construction workers aren't in the sort of company that has got a company employment, a company pension scheme, because they're self-employed in one shape, form or another. So out of a total construction workforce of 2.2-something million, only 36% of the construction workforce is known to be paying into a pension, which is it's pretty rubbish, pretty concerning. And Unite thinks the government needs to take action. And there's a whole host of things all bundled up into this. Unite says it's a function of, they say, bogus self-employment. Half of operatives are officially registered as self-employed and therefore not eligible for the auto-enrollment scheme. Mm-hmm. Coupled in with that, the umbrella companies, which they say impedes, and any surplus cash which people, construction workers, might have available to put in a pension scheme, to save, to put in a piggy bank, is being creamed off by the umbrella company fees, the unions say. And, of course, the general low level of pay for unskilled workers. Unite seems to think that if everyone got a 10% pay rise, and you know, they put some of that pay rise into a pension pot. I'm not sure. I think it's cultural. I mean, a lot of people have been slightly put off by the very word pension has become tarnished by all those scandals of, was it 10, 20 years ago, and people like Robert Maxwell raiding the pension pot and people retiring thinking they've got a company pension and suddenly it's not there. And this sort of invisible money that you might get at some future date, a lot of people would rather invest in property. And I think particularly in the construction industry, if people are in a position to put some money aside, I think there's a much greater appetite to, you know, flip, to buy a wreck, do it up at the weekends, and you know, because you've got the skills or the aptitude or the mates to do that. And so I think that the construction industry lends itself, for obvious reasons, or it's populated by the sort of people who are perhaps more likely to see property as their pension than some you know, invisible piggy bank that they can't see and can't touch.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, hadn't occurred to me, but I suppose that would make sense. The whole thing about pension funds being raided by unscrupulous businesses is, of course, I can understand why a lot of people would not want to get involved with a company pension scheme if, you know, in light of all the bad publicity about people ripping off pension schemes and that kind of thing in the past. I mean, I narrowly avoided being a Maxwell pensioner myself, and I decided instead to take out a private pension with a company called Equitable Life, and we all know how that ended. And so I didn't do particularly well out of that either. That was all up a wall somewhere by some unscrupulous investors. But anyway, yeah, I suppose it makes perfectly good sense if you're in the construction industry and you have the ability to invest in something like property. As we all know, that is normally a good investment. So why not?
Don't take our financial advice, though, people. We are not qualified. Talk to a professional.
No, I certainly
wouldn't.
Make
your own mind up. Don't listen to us. We've got no idea. What should we talk about next? I know. I want to talk about this. I don't know if you saw it, but we've mentioned before about some of the stupid bloody press releases that we get sent, stupid surveys. So here's something from the school of the bleeding obvious that we got. This is from an organisation, and we shouldn't. I feel bad naming and shaming them, because they're just trying to get support for and publicity for a good cause, and I support their cause. And the High Speed Rail Group, I mean, I know you don't support High Speed Rail. You think HS2 should be stopped and the money spent on something much better. I'm a fan of HS2,
yes,
and I'm
agree,
a fan of HS3, 4, 5, and 6 when we get round to deciding what they are too. but anyway, the High Speed Rail Group has put out a survey basically saying that companies working on HS2 think that it would be a bad thing if the project was axed, effectively. And you think, no, Sherlock,
SME suppliers urge government to commit fully to HS2 Eastern Leg is the headline. Press release from the High Speed Rail Group,
I didn't insult our readers' intelligence by posting this story, because this isn't news. A recent survey of SME suppliers in the rail, construction and engineering sectors has found overwhelming support. Exactly what you just said, apologies. SMEs already working on HS2, 80% of them anticipated a drop in revenue should the phase 2 bit not go ahead. And nearly half said they might have to lay people off if the next bit of HS2 didn't go ahead. And you think, well, yeah, you know, you're in the rail business.
It's not surprising because that is the whole raison d'etre of HS2. It's not my view.
Oh, give over. It's not a job creation scheme. It's a transport scheme.
It's a job creation scheme.
We need it. It's a transport scheme.
No, we don't need it at all.
I need to get to Leeds more quickly.
HS2 and Hinkley Point C, they're both... The government has always used the construction industry to regulate the economy. Big infrastructure projects... Job creation schemes. This is nothing new. They've always done it, and this is what HS2 is about. It's about creating work for the industry, and yeah, it's got a trickle down effect. Balfour Beatty and Skanska and Costain and all the other tier one contractors with these £1 billion main contracts.
Apart from the roads, the sewers, the clean water, and the sanitation. All that the Romans have ever done for us is given us some jobs. Is that what you're saying? We need infrastructure.
We need infrastructure, but we don't need HS2. I mean, we're getting sidetracked here because we've had this argument many, many times. But I don't believe that we need HS2. I think that the COVID pandemic has proved that we don't need the high speed rail link now. We need better local transport links. We don't need a great national transport link which will cut half an hour off the journey from London to Manchester or something like that. I don't think we need it. I don't know why they've put out this press release now, except that they just want to keep the good news coming, or to keep the pressure on the government and keep reminding people how important this is to the economy. I imagine that's the only reason. I don't think there's anything particularly timely about this. But as you say, it comes as a surprise to absolutely nobody that these hundreds or thousands of SMEs who are dependent upon these massive infrastructure projects and, you know, everybody in the supply chain wants a piece of the action. The entire industry has had its eyes focused on this for the last 10 years. You know, everybody wants to make sure that they get a contract on HS2 if they can. So, surprise, surprise, they'd be pretty disappointed if it were cancelled.
Now, I agree with you that job creation is no reason for spending £100 billion on a high-speed rail. Or it's certainly insufficient reason. It should be just a nice plus. But as soon as you get any vested interest, used to get in the olden days, Civil Engineering Contractors Association would routinely say, road builders demand more money spent on roads. Or you get the Asphalt Industry Alliance, the asphalt makers say we must have more asphalt put into potholes. And it's like, you would say that. That is in no sense interesting. Say something interesting and surprising that maybe we wouldn't expect you to say, or find someone who doesn't necessarily agree with you normally, being won over to your point of view by the force of your argument, not just by your, you know, naked promotion of your vested interest.
You're absolutely right. I did say that there was no, it wasn't pegged to any news, this particular thing. It came out of the blue. But there is another crap survey which landed on my desk this very morning. You probably got it as well.
Oh, go on.
It's from an organisation called Powered Now, a field service management software company.
Oh, I think I deleted that one. What did it say? What it says,
you see, this is very newsy because they've obviously thought, what's hitting the headlines for the last week or so? And of course, home improvements has been the big story of the last week or so, hasn't it?
Boris, you're talking about.
Exactly. Spending a lot of money on curtains and stuff like that. This one is revealed. Britain's favourite 3 DIY projects to help improve your home's market value. And it's not wallpapering. And so I shall read on. As the property market continues to grow, Brits are back to building their dream homes. So this is ostensibly from a chap called Ben Dyer, who's the CEO of Powered Now. And the four bullet points to summarise the survey, I don't know if they actually did a survey or if they just made it up. 18% of Brits are planning to commence home improvements in the summer of 2021. 33% of those agreed that they were looking to commence a landscaping or garden refurb, amounting to 3 million renovations. 20% agreed have employed a plumber to redo their bathrooms, equaling 1.6 million refurbs. 20% agreed have employed a tradesperson to redo their kitchen, equaling 1.6 million renovations. So really, it doesn't tell you anything, but they have noticed that people are focused on Downing Street renovations, and so they thought that it might help them to piggyback
their name out there.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know why it benefits Powered Now, and to be perfectly honest, as I said, it only landed on my desk this morning, and I haven't read it all the way through. But Powered Now is I better tell you who they are. Powered Now, a field service management software that specialises in the trades, and they've offered insight from the trades on the top three home improvements. So there we are. That's the link.
So, we occasionally get them from people on the very fringes of the industry, I don't know, car hire people or something, saying that,
yes,
you know, plumbers like red sauce and brickies like brown sauce, according to a survey
right.
we did of our plumber and our brickie.
Yeah, and I get a lot about people and what they like to do with their vans as well, which is not particularly interesting. But yeah, there are a lot of fleet management people out there doing surveys. Keep them coming, folks.
Yeah. No, don't. Keep it yourself. Right, how are we doing? Any other business? Oh, apologies, listeners, to all of you expecting Rod Stewart. I promised that we'd have Rod Stewart on this week.
You did.
He's not answering my calls.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I might have the wrong number.
Well, try again.
I'll keep trying. Rod, if you're listening, you know where I am. that's podcast@reconstruction.com. No, it's not. It's podcast@theconstructionindex.co.uk. Drop us a line, and anyone else wants to get in touch, give us your feedback, and let's be hearing from you.
Yeah.
But are we done? Are we done, David?
I think we are, yes. I'm going to go and slip on my wooden shoes now. And
I'm going to put on my bamboo underwear.
Yeah.
Alrighty, for this week, thank you very much, everyone. Cheerio.
Cheerio, bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.